Hello, 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 everyone, and welcome to Spiral Marketing, the podcast where we are working to make marketing better, make better marketers of everyone. Lofty goal, huh? Well, anyway, this episode takes more of a hands-on technical approach to the topic of brand strategy. It's usually a bit more soft and squishy. It's nebulous. No. It can be one of those things that serves as a little hinge to open big doors, but it's often glossed over, if not completely overlooked.
What is the DNA of business marketing? How do we market ourselves now and in the future? Brand communications is evolving. Are you? Let's explore together. Spiral upwards. This is Spiral Marketing.
Peter Mirrors, thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you.
In terms of your bio, I know that you've done some very high-end branding work, both as a consultant for Hinge, as well as through your own branding agency. You're now a partner at an information strategy firm.
Mm-hmm.
You and I worked on an interesting project together a couple of years ago, and I was particularly impressed by your unique perspective on brand strategy. I often run into professionals who take more of a creative stance on branding, whereas I found your approach to be a bit more technically oriented, and I thought that that would make for a very valuable and unique podcast episode. So hopefully that's a good preface to your skill sets. Is there anything else you'd like to add that you think would make for a good preface to your take on brand strategy?
Sure. So everything you said is true. I got interested in branding and marketing many years ago as a teenager. My father was in publishing, and the process of marketing and branding and advertising was a lot of interest to me. So I learned a lot from him. He was also an early pioneer in the bulletin board system, the dial-up bulletin boards way back in the day, and then the early internet. So as I became interested in the projects that he was working on, I sort of developed an interest in both marketing and technology, and I pretty much had one foot in each space ever since. So between 2000 and 2010, I had an information strategy and communications firm, and then went into branding and marketing. I sort of hopped around a little bit for the few years after 2010, and then recently went into information strategy for nonprofit organizations, which we can get back to a little bit later. But the general sense that I got of brand strategy was very hands-on early in my career. It was about just deciding what the visual and written components were that were going to get people to buy stuff, and doing that in a very practical way. So catalog layout and working on just how to present products in a very compelling way. And that sort of morphed into a career in professional services over time, where it became more about selling people as the product and selling services as the product. So I've been on both sides. I've done branding and marketing projects for both consumer products and also professional services, business to business and business to government. So I hope that wasn't too rambling of an answer.
No, I think that was helpful. That's interesting background about your father. What are the bulletin board industries?
Bulletin board systems were the early dial-up precursors of the internet. And so you're making a point-to-point connection with a site, and you were doing it using your modem, so it was dial-up. And back in those days, if you wanted to find out about a site that you could visit, oftentimes you were doing it through word of mouth or through even catalogs or directories, printed directories of sites. So that was an interesting, very primitive, but also wildly exciting time to be involved in in technology and marketing, because there were literally these entirely new pathways of reaching an audience that people had never considered before. Now we take all of that for granted, much as we take it for granted that we can email documents back and forth for signature instead of having to do faxing. Yeah, that was my start. So one of the outcomes of that is I don't take the technology for granted. I've never taken the technology for granted. I mean, it's always been important for me to understand the technological underpinnings of the products that I'm working with.
Perfect. Well, let's get right into it. How do you like to approach brand strategy?
Well, for me, I look at brand in a very holistic way, and I think that can be a challenge for some of the clients that I've worked with over the years. Oftentimes, they're thinking of brand in terms of just its visual components. And usually when I encounter a situation like that, there's an educational process that needs to take place where they need to become aware that the brand is more than just the visual representation of their logo mark, their marketing collateral, their website, and so forth. It's really comprehensive. It's about how you express yourself as a company verbally and also how you behave as a company. So if you're just looking at a brand from the most literal perspective, it's your unique mark, it's your name, it's your logo, and hopefully that distinguishes you and whatever your business property is from competing companies and their property. However, the way I look at brand is a lot more comprehensive than that. It's more the sum of the company's positioning, its messaging, its visual identity, and in a more abstract sense, that emotional and intellectual relationship that you have with your customers. So that definition, the more abstract definition, is based on the viewpoint that perception is the better part of reality. So no matter what qualities you want your brand to portray, it can never be greater than how it's viewed and experienced by the audience. So that's a very holistic and comprehensive way to look at brand. And sometimes that can be a challenge for an organization, because when they start to internalize what a brand is, it becomes apparent that it's not just going to be this sort of marketing visual facelift for their organization, that true brand transformation actually impacts how people behave inside the organization, and also to some extent, how products are made, how they're presented, how they're designed. So I really view it as being comprehensive. Now, some people will say, well, that's just a marketer wanting to rule every aspect of the company. But I think that the flip side to that is that marketing and branding is really about the customer. So if you're good at branding and marketing, you want the customer to show you the path, or the potential customer. And you're not just basing it on your own ego and your creative process and your ability to create that sort of sense of mysticism for your client that you're doing the brand work for and impressing them with sort of that mystical creative process. It really should be, to a certain extent, more technical. I mean, there is a lot of room for creativity in branding, and that's what gets the most press. But there's also this very technical, very logic-driven aspect to it, and that it's the desires of the customer, it's your knowledge of the market that really is going to create that opportunity for you. So that's my approach. It looks at brand very comprehensively. It looks at it as a broad ecosystem of moving parts, and sometimes that is a challenge for an organization.
Interesting. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the definable value for the disbelievers. I've shared this information with you before, but I get approached for a lot of marketing strategy projects, and I find that the brand strategy is extremely important. It's obviously an integral part of marketing. However, people are less interested, from my experience, in paying for it. They're happy to pay for marketing strategy and execution and even brand execution. But in terms of the actual process of coming up with a brand strategy and producing that as a deliverable, I found challenging. And I wanted to hear what you say in those instances to the disbelievers of sorts.
Well, I think that is a perspective that I've encountered a lot over the course of my career. And I think that does come from, to a certain extent, from clients that have hitherto sort of experienced marketers and branders talking about the brand in sort of this mystical creative sense. it's something that isn't as grounded and connected in their work experience to be relatable, and therefore it doesn't seem as tangible to them. I've also encountered it in the marketing space, though, as well, typically from more creative shops that are focused on the visual representation of the brand. And usually that is an aspect of creative people wanting to be creative and not taking the time to really sort of have quantitative or qualitative evidence that suggests how the brand should be portrayed. This give and take in the industry between that creative force that's definitely necessary and the sort of intellectual, technical approach to building a brand. So see it in both ways. And I think for clients specifically, what I emphasize is that everything that we do is going to be grounded in research. And to the extent that research can show us either a clear direction or some sort of indication of the direction in which we want to go. And that all of the activity that we do from a brand strategy perspective is going to be based on that. So it's going to be putting the building blocks together to enable you to make a appealing response to the needs and aspirations of the audience. And I think when we really get down into that and they start seeing what the different components of a brand strategy are and how it's going to be, how that expense is going to be amortized over future marketing projects, it really starts to hit home for them as being something that's worth engaging in.
Let's talk about that amortization. Does that come from the deliverables?
Yeah, it does. First of all, there's a big value to the process just to go through a brand strategy process as an executive team. It's a formational experience. So you're forced to sort of, in that process, in a structured way, back up whatever your thoughts or assumptions were about how you were perceived as an organization. And going through that sometimes helps clients to realize that they don't know as much as they thought they knew about the customer. And they may find out that the assumptions that they've made aren't matched with reality or require some sort of minor adjustment that provides some sort of advantage. So just going through the process is valuable in and of itself. It really can transform how you think about brand as an organization. But just to take one example of how brand strategy amortizes over the course of other projects. So let's just say that you're thinking about doing a website redesign. Well, a lot of the visual components and a lot of the verbal components, the written messaging architecture that you develop as part of a brand strategy process, is going to furnish a lot of the building blocks for the website. Because basically, your website's going to be driven by the research that you do to support a brand process. It's going to be driven by the content that you develop for the messaging of the brand. It's going to be driven by that visual expression that resonates with your audience. So even just taking that into consideration and thinking about all the different times that that brand strategy can be applied to shorten future marketing projects, there's a big payoff there. So just from a dollars and cents standpoint, you're saying, okay, I did this during the brand strategy process, and that was became evident in outcomes in the form of deliverables of that process. And then I'm going to use that deliverable to shorten this next marketing project by 30%, say. So that's where you start to see the immediate ROI just in sort of more hard costs. And then you start to see the benefits of the brand strategy longer term in the form of new business, hopefully more profitable business.
I think that's super helpful. Why don't we talk a little bit about those applications and benefits? It dawns on me that not all listeners will know exactly what we mean by a brand strategy. And even though you defined it, I'm not sure that they'll necessarily make the leap to understanding the applications and the benefits. So can you speak towards that a little bit?
Sure. So brand strategy for me was a concept that was built over a prolonged period of time. So when I've been working with clients over the past 15 to 20 years, it's been about meeting their immediate branding and marketing needs. And then my sense of what the strategy is as a bigger concept grew over time. And then to a certain extent crystallized in the very brief time that I was working with Hinge, I think in 2011, And I have a lot of respect for that firm and the research that they've put into their process and their sense of what brand strategy is. So for me, a brand strategy is first the identification of the key audiences and then research on those audiences. And the point of the research is to see how your organization is viewed from the outside and how your own internal team views the company. And then you can hold those up to each other and sort of see what the delta is between the two. And then there's really the definition of those differentiators, or as I like to call them, more brand attributes. They're often commonly referred to as differentiators, but I prefer brand attributes because there are attributes that don't really differentiate you per se from a competitor. So for me, brand attributes is a more comfortable term. And then it also includes the positioning statement, your sort of verbal and visual positioning. And then the visual expression is of the brand, is part of the brand strategy, a major component, how the positions that you have might be represented using design. So those are your logo options, your color palette, your typography, your imagery, etc. And then the verbal expression of the brand, which is to a certain extent, the written form of the positioning and your brand attributes, but then also a messaging architecture. And a messaging architecture includes primary messages for key audiences, potential objections or questions that those audiences might raise in response to those messages, those primary messages, and then responses and proof points. So again, this is something that's probably a familiar construct to people that have spent a lot of time in branding. It certainly will resonate with those that have been through branding projects. So it is very comprehensive and there's a lot that comes out of it. And you can extend that even further if you want to, but that is more after that point, you get more into the realm of application of the brand. So while you might have guides and standards for how the brand will be applied, those are more extensions of the brand strategy itself.
Excellent. Okay. If we look at this at a 10,000 foot, once somebody goes through a brand strategy, they can expect to have the right written and verbal messages and responses to their major customer segments. And all of their materials will be improved by the fact that they will have the exact messaging that is crafted to elicit the right response and communicate to the correct audience the benefits that are most important to them. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that's correct. And the same is true of the visual aspect of the brand.
Excellent. Hopefully we've spoken well enough to the disbelievers.
I think the primary message that I'd want to get out there is, look, this brand strategy stuff is, it's practical. It's not abstract. It's not sort of some surrendering to an arbitrary creative process. It is sort of touchy-feely in an aspect that you want to be in touch with the emotional needs of your audience, as well as the intellectual needs. But it is not just an exercise in sort of arbitrary creativity.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I find that if the project goes well, it tends to be a process of agreement in that you want everyone to agree about the best methods. You want to figure out what the customer would agree to and what they like about the brand, what everyone agrees are the strengths and the weaknesses to overcome, etc.
Yeah, it is a great process for getting all of the stakeholders inside an organization on the same page, for sure. And part of that is doing the research, because if you ask the same questions or approximately the same questions of the internal stakeholders as you do the audiences that you're engaging with, and as I said, you have the opportunity to see what the delta is. And so that really has a way of galvanizing and solidifying the internal viewpoint of what needs to be done.
Sure. How do you know when business owners or brand managers really have a problem?
You know, that's a tough question to answer because there are so many different indicators of that. One of the things that I would raise as being a potential problem is when you don't know what the reputation and visibility of your brand is, that's the time to at least start considering a brand strategy project. Because the brand strategy process is designed to answer those questions. I don't think that there's a organization out there that wouldn't want to know how visible are we in the market and what is our reputation and how do those concepts unpack? Because those things are key to gaining new business. Of course, you want to be visible and of course, you want to have a good reputation. And really, all brand pursuits sort of boil down to those things. So that's one place to start. If you don't know the answers to what is our reputation and how visible are we, then that's a time to consider. There are other things that manifest themselves more as problems, like severe problems. So for example, if you are getting just a cluster of horrible customer input and you know that you have a brand problem, let's just say that that customer input is based on the customer's experience with your customer service. Well, you might think of that as being just an operational problem, but that has become part of your brand, the experience that people have with your customer service team. So fixing that problem is a part of fixing your brand. So there are many different lenses into that, but I would say that the one that is sort of most applicable across the board is the one that I first mentioned.
Do you have any experience with the most extreme brand strategy projects where effectively you need to recommend a rebrand or they're considering a rebrand?
Yeah, for sure. There are a lot of organizations that I've worked with that could benefit from a complete rebrand, and not all of them are ready to engage in that. Yeah, I mean, it can be expensive and there's a lot of internal, oftentimes disagreement among stakeholders that has led to the brand being in its current state. I think that one of the most difficult decisions for a company comes when they realize that they have a branding problem that stems from having a diverse group of services or products that don't have any apparent relationship to each other. So the brand message and the brand visuals are getting muddied, and trying to figure out what to do with those service lines or product lines that aren't going to be a core part of the company's identity moving forward is a very difficult decision, especially for smaller businesses, small to mid-sized businesses that have grown very organically and really don't have a sense of how to make those kinds of business decisions and how to approach them. So that can be a big challenge.
Are there any signals when enough is enough and you really do need to rebrand?
Yeah, I think one of the signals would be that your customers don't understand what your brand conveys. So you might have a company that's grown primarily through word of mouth, and to a certain extent, it's reached the limitations of what it can accomplish there. And you ask the customers, when you think of company X, what are they known for? And they will usually say, well, what they're known for is, you know, service X or product X, whatever they're purchasing. And then the next question might be, well, what does the brand convey? And they say, well, we don't know. It's kind of unclear. You know, we know what they do for us, but if you go to the website, it's just confusing. You know, we don't understand the logo. Doesn't seem to be connected in any way to what we're doing. The name is a meaningless acronym. Not that that's always bad, but, or it's an acronym that requires too much energy to understand, such as a four-letter acronym that's the initials of the founders of the firm or something of that nature. Those are the kinds of challenges where you say, okay, we need to do a complete overhaul here. This brand is not communicating in any resonant way with the audience.
I see. Utter confusion and probably an utter dislike would be the two major signals.
Well, yeah, but they don't necessarily go hand in hand. So I've done brand research for a company, government contractor in satellite communications several years ago, where the research indicated that the number one thing that the customer base wanted from that company was for them to brag about themselves more. That they said, you guys are a great company, but you don't do enough to help yourself. So they had a great sort of reputation of their brand, but the brand itself was confusing. It sort of didn't travel well outside of the current customer base. So that was the primary takeaway from that brand process. It wasn't that they were disliked or that the market wasn't ready for them. It was just that they weren't doing enough to help themselves with their brand. And their customers said it loud and clear. Look, you guys need to be a little bit more boisterous.
That's unexpected.
Yeah, that's a great outcome, right? That's what you hope for when you're opening yourself up to sort of the vulnerability of finding out what your customers really think. We oftentimes talk about the humility of going through a brand strategy process and not in a sense of, you know, this is going to be a horrible, humbling process. We have the humility as an organization to see ourselves through the eyes of our customers. And that does take a certain humility and self-confidence. So when you're exposing yourself in that way, to get the payoff that you're loved and respected and wanted, and that your customers want you to have more success, is basically the best possible outcome. I think that was the most ecstatic I've ever been to review a set of research results, because I said, well, the client is really going to love this. They're not going to have any trouble buying into the subsequent parts of the brand strategy process now that we've done this research.
How about that mindset? You mentioned the humility. I think that open-mindedness is also huge and probably challenging to, it's a challenging response to elicit and preface. So can we talk a little bit about how to prepare clients for that mindset?
Yeah, I think it can be a bit of a challenge, particularly in organizations where the original founders are still running the company. Because they have a lot of emotional investment in what the brand is and what it's developed to be. They may have had a very hands-on process there. And they have a very idea. Their determination and drive and commitment and sense of what the market wanted and what it needed and how they were going to meet that need is all invested in that brand. So in that case, you just have so much emotional investment. And so part of it's the ability to step back and take an objective viewpoint. Partly it's to really be in listening mode again after you've been in this frenetic pace of trying to grow your business and really help it to thrive. And sometimes partly it is about letting go of your ego, taking this more open approach, and just sort of developing this corporate humility. And I don't want to make it to be just about owners and executives, because if you have a customer service team and you're saying, look, in order for us to develop this brand presence, we need you to behave in this way, and you got a lot of pushback, then those are people that you need to get on the bus as well. And they also need to mirror that open-mindedness and that humility. So it really does start with leadership, but then it has to convey throughout all of the different areas of the organization. So one of the ways that you get past that, again, is just to come back to the research. And that's the value of investing in research, partly as a means of getting that perspective and getting everybody on the same page. Because then it's no more about, well, we know our customers, you know, we talk to them all the time, we know what they're saying, etc. Well, we really took the time to be open about this. We got somebody else to talk to the customers and ask them a structured set of questions. This is what the customers are saying, and this is our situation. It's right there. Everybody can see it. If we want to make that next step, we're going to have to do this. So part of that is just that as a brand advisor, you're in that prove it sort of mentality a lot of times. You have to prove to the client why they should be doing this. And part of it is to help overcome that natural reluctance to be told by somebody else what you should do.
And probably listen to the data, right? Get them ready to listen to the data. I think that's embedded throughout everything that you said, but that really strikes me is that everybody's going to come to the table with assumptions, but let's try and gather data so that we can test against those assumptions.
And sometimes organizations aren't ready to take that step. Sometimes they'll get through the research process and then they'll say, you know what, we don't believe in these results. Or, you know, we're going to let this sit for a while and decide what we think about it and then never come back to it. So an organization can sometimes be very sort of say, okay, we're going to invest in the research and we're going to do this. And then when it comes actually to the point of changing behavior based on what that input is, that can be a challenge. And this is something that is true across a lot of different kinds of strategy projects. It's not particular to brand strategy. So I'll give you an example. In the information strategy space, we do a lot of work with constituent or customer relationship management systems, or CRM. They've grown to be one of the cornerstone systems of a lot of organizations. And when you really want to do customer engagement well and really invest in a CRM system as an aspect of that, that is a behavioral change process. It has to be a behavioral change process in order to do it effectively and get the return on investment. It's kind of like saying, I went to a fight last night and a hockey game broke out. You could talk about any one of these strategic initiatives, whether it's brand strategy or marketing strategy or information strategy, and say, I went to a strategy process and an organizational change process broke out. I mean, it's just going to happen. And some organizations have the wherewithal in order to make that change and change their behavior, and some don't. So it's best to try to ascertain that with the client in candor at the start of projects. But sometimes it's not possible to really convey that to them without them experiencing it. So sometimes you do get to the point where you say, you have gotten all the way up through the entire brand strategy process, and then the client pulls the plug. And maybe it's because they're not going to get buy-in from some other stakeholders in the company that needed to be involved from the start but weren't. Sometimes it's because they have emotional concerns about their ability to implement the strategy across their entire workforce. Maybe they already have a workforce that's stressed and they don't want to ask any more of them at that time. And it could be a variety of reasons. So that's just something to a word of encouragement and also caution to those that are thinking about this process. It's something that you have to commit to. It's not something that you can just sort of kind of do, or you're not going to get the benefit from it.
The quote comes to mind that you can bring a horse to water, but not make them drink.
Yeah, that's true. Not that we would ever refer to our clients as horses, but...
And I think it's really interesting how you made the journey from brand strategy to information strategy. And I want to talk through that, explore that a little bit before we wrap. But before we do that, I wanted to see if we could maybe take 60 to 90 seconds to just chat through the process of brand strategy, maybe like a 30 to 60 second lesson for just at a very high level. Somebody just walked in the door and they're the junior brand strategy manager and they've got to jump right in. How do we get them started?
At the highest level, every brand strategy process that's well-founded starts with identification of the key audiences and then the research. And then what you're going to do is go through the process of developing the verbal expression of the brand and then the visual expression.
Will they collect differentiators before that?
Well, I really think about the collection of differentiators or brand attributes as being the first step of developing the verbal expression of the brand. So the verbal expression is inclusive of that.
Good. Okay. So we find out who the customers are. We collect the differentiators, what sets them apart, those attributes of the brand. We put together the visual and verbal expression in terms of here are the major benefits, here are the messages that need to be called out to those customers from a verbal and visual expression. And there's your super high level brand strategy lesson, right?
That's right. And then you're talking about brand application, and that's a whole nother conversation.
Absolutely. Okay, well, let's talk about information strategy. What brought you from brand strategy to information strategy in the nonprofit space?
I've spent a lot of time in both the marketing and technology spaces, and I've almost killed myself, one might say, trying to maintain competencies in both areas over the years.
They're both deep rabbit holes.
Yeah, so about 5 years ago, I decided that I wanted to do branding for technology companies as the next thing that I was going to do in my career and my entrepreneurial endeavors. So I thought that there was a big opportunity there. A lot of technology companies don't really speak well for themselves. So I committed to doing that. And I had a developing practice there. It was going quite well, doing work with a broad range of mostly business-to-business and business-to-government firms headquartered in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. And then I met a guy who was involved with technology for nonprofits. And just sort of being aware of my background with nonprofits, which is a part of my background in technology, he said, well, would you like to help out with this project that I've got going on for benefiting this nonprofit? I think it was the Employment Justice Center in D.C. or something like that. And so it was an IT assessment project. And so I said, sure, I'll help out with that. And after that, I was hooked. I love working with nonprofits. It can be extremely joyful and extremely frustrating at the same time, like all business to a certain extent. But I discovered that was where my passion really was. And so it basically matured into doing some work with community IT innovators in DC, which is an IT management and consulting firm that works exclusively with nonprofits. And then joining a firm as a partner called Build Consulting, B-U-I-L-D Consulting, doing information strategy for nonprofits. And there's a couple ways that that's related to the brand and marketing strategy work that we're talking about. One is a lot of what we help nonprofits with is their constituent engagement strategies and systems. So that can be a variety of web sites, social media, and CRM systems and integrations between them. And of course, that's within the sort of jurisdiction of brand marketing and communications. So there's a lot of ways to apply my skills in that area. And also, it has a very familiar construct. In all of these information strategy projects, you start with some sort of discovery and needs assessment and research. You build the strategy based on the requirements from both internal and external constituents, and then you move into solution design and implementation. So there's a lot of similarities. It's something that I have a passion for. That's where I see my career being for the indefinite future. But, you know, being an entrepreneur and being involved with Build Consulting right now, I have an opportunity to flex my branding and marketing skills over time as a partner in that firm. So I still get my branding and marketing fix in a variety of different ways. Something that I was pleased to not have to give up as an aspect of moving more into this nonprofit technology space.
Well, I'm sure we all know a few nonprofits who could use brand strategy as well as information strategy.
Yeah, that's true. And I try not to engage too much in both ways. I try to keep it more focused on information strategy and technology. But again, these days with branding and marketing, you're going to be delivering so much of that via technology that it's inevitable that there'll be some connections.
Right. Well, it's not easy to choose just one hat. I'm impressed that you're moving in that direction.
Yeah, I think particularly as a serial entrepreneur, it's difficult. You know, I think part of that is just working with a great team. You know, I have three other partners in Build who are outstanding and have great general expertise and also specific areas of expertise. And, you know, our ability to play off each other and hand off responsibilities has been outstanding. And we've had some good success with it. We've been working on constituent engagement solution projects with organizations like the UN Foundation and the African Wildlife Foundation and some of these others, big names in the nonprofit space. And we've been pretty successful. So I'm glad that that's working out and excited about the future.
What's an example of a problem you all are solving?
Well, it can vary depending on what the orientation is. But let's just say that an example of a common problem would be we need to make sure that our lifetime expected return out of a donor is maximized. So we need to make sure that we engage with that donor in such a way that we're going to be able to have and maintain a great relationship, a great interactive relationship. But at the same time, that needs to be affordable for us. So how are we going to be able to automate certain aspects of the maintenance of this relationship while at the same time maintaining that sense of personal connection with that donor. Same thing can be true of more institutional donors, funders, foundations, and government agencies. So that is one area that is a big area of work for us. And that would be a very specific problem.
Sounds like it could almost be its own podcast episode, if not a series.
Well, that's for sure. And you know, nonprofits, like a lot of different kinds of companies, are most concerned about proven results and funding revenue. So, you know, on the other side of the challenge for nonprofits, we have a lot of increased requirements from those same funders to demonstrate the proven success of their work, so that there's a lot of performance measurement, there's a lot of monitoring and evaluation. And so that's an area that we're working in as well, to help customers really make sure that they have high quality performance data from their programs, and that they can do reporting and analysis and visualization of that data in an efficient way to help satisfy the demands of all of these different kinds of funders.
Excellent. Well, I know we're running short on time and I don't want to keep you, but is there anything else that you'd like to cover in terms of brand strategy?
We can have a much, much longer conversation about brand strategy. There are a couple of things that I just want to, pieces of advice that I want to give to an executive that's considering a brand strategy project. And this is true whether they're, you know, a marketing executive or a CEO or another executive. So the first thing is that make sure that you do your research, especially when it comes to brand design. When you do a design without research, customer research first, it can become an extremely arbitrary process.
Interesting.
It can become much bogged down in a lot of personal perspectives and likes and dislikes. This is also true of the verbal expression, but for some reason it's a hang up for visual more so. So make sure you do that research, both initially and then incrementally over time, to keep your knowledge of the audiences fresh. So that's one thing. Another thing is, get outside of your daily work environment. Make the time to think about the brand in an environment that's not your office work environment, that's not going to be in constant interruption. It is something that's introspective. It is something that requires you to put yourself in the mindset of different internal and external audiences, and that requires space. So getting outside of your daily work environment is important as you consider going through this process. Another thing that I would say is, get exercise. So a lot of clients, you know, they're in their day-to-day, they're very sort of dealing with all of the things that can come up over the course of work a day with a lot of demands on their time, but they don't make time for exercise. And exercise really is great for both calming down the brain and for releasing different kinds of chemicals inside of the brain, without getting too technical, that help to spur the creative process. So getting good exercise as you're trying to think about these kinds of brand-related questions is very important. And finally, just because this always comes up during visual expression work, don't put pressure on your logo to convey too much. Think about a lot of the brands that you know. What you put behind your brand ultimately is what that the logo will end up meaning. I mean, think about really popular brands like Starbucks, and think about what that logo conveys. And a logo can really only convey one or maybe two things clearly. So don't try to pack every single possible intellectual and emotional nuance of what you want to convey out of your company into a symbol. It's not going to happen. That is something that's really important that comes out of prioritizing brand attributes or differentiators, is that you really know what your lead position is, and then you can convey that sort of simple idea to the extent possible on that symbol. But if you try to do too much, you're going to be 10 rounds of logo design concepts in, and you're just going to be getting frustrated.
Okay, great. That's helpful. Are there any other resources that you would recommend the audience checking out?
Well, there's a great book called Designing Brand Identity, by, I think it's pronounced Alina Wheeler, A-L-I-N-A-W-H-E-E-L-E-R. It's in its fourth edition. It has a lot of great visual and verbal expression examples in it. It's a wonderful book. It's great food for thought. Even if you're just paging through it, you'll be presented with so many different concepts. You'll really enjoy it. From my time in professional services marketing, I would definitely recommend a book called Professional Services Marketing by Mike Schultz and John E. Doerr. You can find that on Amazon, I'm pretty sure. People who are familiar with the professional services marketing space will probably recognize their names or may recognize their names or might be more likely to recognize Rain Today or the Wellesley Hills Group, which are what they're a part of. Anything, pretty much anything that Hinge puts out, they've really invested a lot in creating these incredible e-books and white papers about professional services marketing. And a lot of the concepts are applicable to other kinds of marketing as well, from consumer product marketing to service solution, sort of software product marketing and services. So there's a lot of meat there. And I think all of that can be found in the library and the blog at hingemarketing.com.
Great. And I'll make sure to link up all of those resources and have them referenced in the show notes on spiralmarketing.com. And well, I think that this has been excellent. What is the best place for people to learn more and to reach you?
Well, I can be reached on LinkedIn. So if you just search for Peter Muris, I think I may be one of two Peter Murises in the United States. So that could be, that's a differentiator for me. And also I can be found on thisisbuild.com. That's my current firm. And so, yeah, check me out, connect. If you have any questions, you can shoot them to me and I'll be happy to answer them.
Perfect. I will get all of that linked up in the show notes on spiralmarketing.com. And you and I were talking about putting together some kind of a branding guideline, white paper, or worksheet. So I'll get that up as soon as it's ready.
Yeah, I think we were discussing putting together sort of a brand self-diagnostic checklist. And so that'll help people to self-answer the question of whether a brand strategy process is right for them. I hope that'll be a valuable tool.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. All right, perfect. Well, Peter, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Carl. Good talking to you.
Likewise. I've seen a number of organizations forego the brand strategy process to keep up momentum with their projects, like their website design, even their brochure and sales collateral. They need to be careful of a penny saved, which can be a pound foolish. The benefits of creating a brand strategy are great. The sales team know the most important messages to say to their different customer categories. The web copy is better planned based on your priorities and what your prospects want to know. It's okay if you don't need or if you can't hire a consultant. Just make sure you go through the process, get data to challenge your assumptions, and be open-minded. If you're a consultant, then don't forget to take your own medicine and practice what you preach. During the pre-show call, Peter gave a Martin Lawrence quote, "There ain't nothing to it but to do it. So go forth and conquer." By the way, if you like what you've been listening to, if you like this show, then please don't hesitate to reach out and let me know. I'm doing this for you, the valuable audience, so I'd love to hear from you. You can get in touch with me at spiralmarketing.com. Just go to the website, fill out the form. I definitely read those. Also, if you really love the show, then please go on iTunes and leave a review, because that helps a lot. And I definitely read those as well. So thank you so much. Look forward to hearing your feedback. And thank you so much for listening. Cheers.